Let's get started. Today's topic is incredibly relevant. At least once, if not numerous times over one's career. Who here has gone on an interview before? Everybody. Basically, almost everyone's gone on an interview before. So our discussion today is going to focus on, when you're at that interview, do you need to disclose when you have a potential conflict between being an observant Jew on the one hand and responsibilities to the employer on the other hand? So that's going to be our broad question. We're going to cover four parts of this. Number one, do I need to disclose? We're going to call it as follows, if I need to disclose. That's number one. If I need to disclose, what do I need to disclose about being observant? So it's if, what, if I need to disclose, when do I need to disclose it? And if I need to disclose, how do I disclose it? So it's four parts. These are the questions once again. If I need to disclose, what I need to disclose, when I should disclose it, and how should I disclose it? Okay, those are our four broad questions that we are going to cover. I have a question for you, in fact. What we are now talking about is not, can I lie on a resume, for example. That's not what we're talking about, can I lie. Obviously, I can't lie. Well, our question is, do I actively have to disclose certain things about who I am, certain conflicts? Do I actively have to tell them information about myself? Why would I be obligated to disclose anything? Al pi halacha.
As you say, it's better for you anyway, because if they don't want...
It's better for you anyway, otherwise you're going to cause a conflict for yourself, okay? Halachically?
You might be getting a job under false pretense.
Which, I'm leading them in the wrong way.
They might need days off for Yom Tov that they don't know about.
What would I call that? Gnevas Das. What's Gnevas Das? Literally, stealing somebody's mind, somebody's information. What we would call it, in the legal sense, we would call it being misleading, misrepresenting who I am. So our question is, do I actively need to disclose information that my potential boss would want to know about me? So that was question number one I had about you. My second question before we get going is regarding what to disclose. We said if to disclose, what to disclose, when to disclose, and how to disclose. When it comes to what to disclose, we're talking about the potential conflicts that I may have on the job. What are those? What are the most significant conflicts that an observant Jew may have working at a secular place? We're obviously not talking about a Shomer Shabbos own place in Brooklyn and Borough Park, etc., Flatbush, Williamsburg, or working in Bnei Brak, and they know what we're talking about. They close down for Shabbos, etc. But when you get out there, if you go work in the secular world, what are the potential conflicts? Shabbos and what goes along with Shabbos? Yom Tov, right? Those are similar, not exactly the same. Shabbos comes every week. Yom Tov, you hope that it's Yom Tov is on the weekends, Shabbos and Sunday, because then you have less trouble. Anything else? Shabbos and Yom Tov.
Kashrus,
potentially, depending on who's been at a job that kashrus was an issue. Okay, not as much. Jeffrey.
Like mincha?
Mincha, getting out during the winter months. But we'll have a whole subject on making mincha. Do you have to go during the work days, or are you prohibited to go because you're on salary? If you are on salary, then maybe you're stealing from your boss, taking off that time. So we'll cover both of those questions. Do you have to go, or are you prohibited to go? So number one, we'd say Shabbos and Yom Tov. Number two, we would say possibly kashrus, lifestyle issues, mincha. Yichud, that comes up in the workplace, but when it comes to disclosures, maybe those are secondary. The biggest one, by far, is the Shabbos and Yom Tov question. Okay, what we're going to do today, we're going to divide up this topic in two. The first part of the topic is going to be in general about Gnevas Das, misrepresenting, when do I have an active duty to disclose information about myself. And the second part, we are going to talk specifically about how that applies to being in the workplace, disclosures about being from, and potential conflicts that an employer may want to know. We are also, guys, going to leverage a similar context, which is the shidduch context. What do you need to disclose when somebody is dating? I am just going to pull some concept out of that. If you have any questions on that, I am going to punt that to a posek. I'm not going to get into the details on it. I'm just going to cause enough havoc in that area and then move out of it. We're just going to leverage it for our own purposes when it comes to the workplace. Okay, so what we're going to go through now, part one is Ganevas Das. What's this concept of Ganevas Das? Being misleading, deceptive, creating a false impression. So the Gemara in Chulin, Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph, says as follows, Amar Shmuel. Shmuel comes and tells us, Aser lignov das abrios vafilo dato shalovi kachavim. It is prohibited to mislead somebody, even if the person that you are dealing with is not Jewish. There's an unfortunate misconception among some Jews that it's okay to steal, lie, and be deceptive of the non-Jews. In fact, there's a Tosefta that says that being deceptive, stealing from a non-Jew, is even worse than stealing from a Jew because of the added Chilul Hashem that is involved there. So the laws that we're talking about of Ganevas Das, in our context, when it comes to dealing with employers, it applies to a Jewish and non-Jewish employer alike. Says the Rambam in the Halachas in dealing with business transactions, Hilchas Mechira, Aser Ramas es b'nei Adam b'mekach u'memkar, it's prohibited to deceive people when we are doing business with them, when you're doing a deal with them, selling, buying something, or lignov et datum, or be deceptive to them, be misleading. It applies both to Jews and non-Jews alike, says the Rambam. Haya yodeya shiesh b'memkar amum. If you know that there is a defect in what you are selling, and when it comes to job, that defect could be you, right? That could be that I have a defect, I have something to disclose. Somebody knows you have a defect in what you're selling, you need to tell it to the potential purchaser. Afilu lignov das or brias bedvarimas, or even verbally being deceptive is problematic. Even one word being deceptive is problematic. I'll tell a story. I don't know if I should tell it about. There was a boy. We'll leave it like that. There was a boy who was about 12 years old, 13 years old, that he came to Israel. He had his bar mitzvah here, and then he stayed on to camp called Stei Chemed. I don't know, I think it's still around. And what was done back then, this is 30-something years ago, electronics were incredibly expensive in Israel. They're still more expensive than the United States of America, but I think South Africa may be cheaper, I think. I'm not sure. I remember somebody was once looking around for a baby carriage, and he said it's cheapest in the States, it's most expensive than South Africa, and it's in the middle in Israel. So back then, electronics was incredibly expensive in Israel, so the Arab workers in the camp would look to buy, at the end of the summer, the cameras and stuff, the Walkmans that used cassette tapes, after the summer. So he approached this boy, I want to buy you a camera. The boy knew that he was coming, but the problem was the viewfinder fell off of the camera. And you know the guy is on the way to purchase the camera, so how am I going to stick this on? I don't want the guy to know. So he didn't have any proper glue to glue it on. So he took some toothpaste and put the toothpaste around the viewfinder and stuck it on. That would be a moom. That would be a defect in the good that needs to be properly disclosed. I think that was fixable in a proper way, but it was not done. Okay, so that would be a problem of Ganevas Das. There is a discussion in the poskim, by the way, if this is an Isser d'Oraisa or it is a d'Rabbanan, is it biblically prohibited, Ganevas Das? Ganevas, obviously, stealing outright is a d'Oraisa, but how about Ganevas Das, being deceptive? Is it d'Oraisa, is it d'Rabbanan? There's a famous sheet of the Yireim that says as follows, Gonev Das abrios b'mide d'mamon. If the Ganevas Das has something to do with the financial, meaning you're selling something and you're misrepresenting the item, that is an Isser d'Oraisa of Lotig Novu. Just an interesting point on Ganevas Das. The Shulchan Aruch paskens as follows, and we're not going to get into it. I'm going to open up a can of worms a little bit now. He says that Ganevas Das, obviously prohibited. What's one of the variables of Ganevas Das? Shemara she'oseh bishvilo ve'eino oseh. If you show somebody that you're doing him a favor, but you're really not doing him a favor, that would be included in the prohibition. So one of the ramifications of that would go as follows. If you know that you're getting married or your bar mitzvah and you're sending out invitations and you know you have this guy back in the United States and it's happening here, or you're in South Africa and you know a guy, a third cousin that you don't really like so much, but you say, I know he's not going to come, so I may as well send him an invitation because I'm hoping he doesn't come. That is showing that you're doing him a favor, but you're really not, your intention is really not pure. that could be a problem of Geneva Stas. Now, obviously, there are times that for Shalom Bayis, you may not want to invite a relative, but you feel you have to. That we wouldn't really say is Geneva Stas. But when you know that guy's not going to come and I'm just going to send him an invitation because of that, that could be a problem of Geneva Stas. Now, there's a textbook that I sometimes use. It's in a very important book of business. It's Dogberg's Big Book of Business, Build a Better Life by Stealing Office Supplies. Okay, build a better life by stealing. Jeremy, they probably used this in, when you got your master's, when you got your MBA. So this is a very important. So there's a page in here that talks about lying on your resume, page 83, and it says as follows. I'll show it on the camera here. I can read it. Nobody ever got a job by being completely honest on the resume. Make your lies bold, creative, and above all, unverifiable. Okay, so Dogberg is here. He's sitting in the interview, and the interviewer asks him as follows. Your resume shows 20 years as a senior executive at the CIA. So Dogberg answers. He responds, yes, and they are instructed to kill anybody who tries to check on it. Okay, make it unverifiable. So obviously, halachically, lying on a resume is a problem. We would not paskin like Dogbert's big book of business. Okay, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very important tshuva that relates to what we're talking about. Here, who here is from New York? Okay, tell me about the regents. What are the regents exams?
Standardized tests.
Standardized exams that all high school...
You gotta take every year.
How many are there approximately?
Three, four per year.
So a lot of them. And they're fairly important. They go on your resume? Your transcript?
College transcript.
They go on your college transcript. And would people put it on the resume also if when they're interviewed?
You could.
England. Anyone from England here? They have standardized exams across the board for everyone, right?
Yeah.
So that's fairly critical. Anyone else? Other states? I remember growing up in California, they had the achievement exams. I don't think they have them anymore. They did away with them.
We had the STAR tests.
STAR tests? And where? What state?
California.
Okay, so that would be the achievement test. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, living in New York, was asked, is it permitted for a yeshiva, because there was a rumor that there was a yeshiva or yeshivot that were permitting its students to steal the exams in advance. What's the benefit of that? Stealing the exams in advance?
You don't have to waste the time.
Why waste the time studying? Bittul Torah. You get to study more. Just give them. You let them steal it. I didn't say that they let them have the answer, but they enable them. Before I forget this, Rav Moshe says at the end of the tshuva that it was a false rumor that was spread by anti-Semites. There was a newspaper that was anti-Semitic that spread this new rumor. So I'll say that at the get-go. Rav Moshe concludes his tshuva with that. I didn't want to forget to say that. But Rav Moshe was asked, would it be permitted for yeshiva to enable the students to steal the regents exams? So Rav Moshe answers that is prohibited. Why is it prohibited? He brings three reasons. Help me out here. Why would it be prohibited?
If they get good jobs, they steal it.
So you're jumping to number three. Right. No. Okay, so we'll get back to that. Very good. Rachman. Chilal Hashem. You know, he doesn't say that, but that's for sure. So let's say four answers. Four reasons. Chilal Hashem, number one. Bad chinuch. Number, so we have five reasons. Number one, chilul Hashem. Number two, bad chinuch. Number three,
unfair to other students.
Only six reasons. Very good. The Ramosha's three are, these are great responses. Ramosha says, number one, dina de machusa dina. You're violating the law of the land. You can't let that, the law of the land, that's illegal under the laws of the United States of America, under New York law. Number one. Number two, he says, it's geneva stas. It is giving a misrepresentation of the capabilities of that student. You're sowing into the future grades that you did not earn. That's number two. And number three, as Rachamim said, it is absolute stealing. It's not only dinah machusid, it's not only geneva stas, but it's outright theft. Why is it outright theft? So he says as follows, Ela tuhu gam geneva stavar mamish. You are stealing. Why? Because when you go out and an employer asks for your transcript or they ask for your resume and you have your scores on it, and they are giving you a job accordingly based on the representation of what you accomplished, and you did not indeed accomplish that, says Rav Moshe that is stealing from the employer who is paying you a salary based on your representations that were false. Rav Moshe then goes on in this tshuva, he says as follows, V'ein lo liton v'lomar sha'af im kiblu ala avod etzlo adata da'achi hu kik makbid al davar sheno tzarech. They gave me the job. They liked me, obviously. So why are they caring about something that doesn't have any reality, doesn't matter at all, right? It's great. It's a big deal. They liked me. They met me. They thought I was intelligent. So why should the grades matter? Interesting. I used to work at a company for about 5 years that there was a president and a CEO. The CEO, the first thing he would look at was where somebody went to school. What degrees do you have? Where did you go to school? And the president, who himself never finished high school, he didn't look at that at all. He didn't care what the resume said. He wanted to meet the person. So Rav Moshe is saying, so what happens if you're that president that doesn't care? Maybe that is, there's no basis. He wants to know the person, such as Rav Moshe. Still, it's prohibited to take those scores and use those scores for three, he says four reasons. I'll just go through three of them. Number one, it's prohibited to lie. I guess that's the point. If it's not, you know, it's prohibited to lie. Chazal tell us there are limited times when it's permitted to lie. This is not one of them. The Chazal don't say you can lie when it comes to your grades on the regents exams. Number one. Number two, if that employer knew that you were a liar, he would never hire you. He would never have any faith in you. Number two, and then number three is very interesting. Rav Moshe says, Badai shayach lahakpi. This is something that we should be careful about. Having, as Rav Moshe Feinstein said this, having a secular education is a sign that somebody is better able to do a job than somebody who doesn't have that proper education. So somebody who's going to be getting a secular education should take it seriously. And Rav Moshe says, and if you want to tell me, and they did say, it'll enable us to spend more time in the base medrash rather than studying for the exam, Rav Moshe does not buy that at all. The ends do not justify the means of stealing the exams. In any case, Rav Moshe says, this is teaching the students laziness. It is not teaching them proper work ethic. So Rav Moshe prohibits across the board enabling the students to get those exams. Now, what we've learned from this Rav Moshe is that it's prohibited to misinform a potential employer about our credentials if indeed we did not earn those credentials. Now we have an interesting question then. The resume is fundamentally a marketing piece. That's what it is. We are marketing ourselves. So that doesn't mean that it shouldn't have personality and show who we are and put things in a good light as to who we are. That's expected on a resume. But when it comes to lying, that's absolutely prohibited. If you have questions about this, ask a Rav, because obviously there are a lot of degrees between the two as to what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. But outright lying and showing credentials that were not earned, that is indeed problematic. So our next question then is, what's the standard for what needs to be disclosed? What's our standard? When I'm thinking here about what do I have to tell this potential employer about my frumkeit, about who I am, what do I have to say and what do I not need to say? So now we're going to dabble in the context of shiduchim, dating. And ironically, interestingly, these two areas are fairly comparable. Somebody who's interviewing for a job, wants to get hired for a job. Somebody who's dating is interviewing for a long-term job, right? Like a lifetime job. So we have similar, very close similarities in this. Yeah, Ben.
Is there another shita besides Rav Moshe on taking the regents? Because I keep hearing that people take the regents for these students.
There's no other shita. There's no shita.
It's very prevalent, supposedly.
There's no shita that says it's permitted. It's no shita that says permitted. Rav, no shita that says... There is no bona fide shita that says it's permitted to steal the exams. No, there's no way.
I'm hearing how prevalent it is that...
You know, it could it be like the blood libel, that it keeps coming up over and over again, that the Jews are killing non-Jewish Christians for the blood? It hasn't happened once in history.
No, I keep
right?
hearing from so, people who go to these yeshivas that they have their teachers take the tests for them.
Then... I don't know. Have them give me a call. I don't know. It's not permitted. It's not permitted. Okay, so the standard to disclose, we can now get into the shidduch context a little bit. Says the Sefer Chassidim as follows. Lo yichse adam mum b'nei beiso. One should not cover up a defect that is in one's house. What does that mean, in one's house? In one's family. If one's children or one's relatives are going out and dating, if they have a disease, in Yeshlam Choli, in other words, a serious genetic disease would fall under this. There's a family genetic disease, that's a problem. She'ilu hayu yodim osam hamizdavgim. if the other side had known about this defect, if the girl, well, you know, it applies for girls and boys, but just for ease, I'll say, if the girl knew that this family had that defect, that problem, that medical issue, lo hayu mizdavgim, they would not have accepted the shidduch. It was a deal killer. They would not, they would have known, they had they known, it had it been disclosed, we have a requirement to disclose it. And if it's not disclosed, it's possible that the other side, when they find out about it, even after marriage, can say, this was what's called a mekach taus. Mekach taus is that this marriage was based on a false premise and it didn't exist. It's nullified. It didn't exist. It had no basis. That's number one. Number two, says the Sefer HaChassidim, im yesh ma'isim ra'im lam. There are bad deeds in the family, that if the other family had known, if the girl had known, that the entire family are members of the mob. That's how they afforded this house and all their fancy cars, because they're all gangsters. Had she known that, had it been disclosed, that's a problem. That has to be disclosed. And then he talks about in the tzedakah context. If the people have known, if people had known proper information about the collector, or the charity, the institution, they would not have given. Obviously, there's a responsibility to disclose up front. I remember growing up in Los Angeles, there was somebody who went shul to shul collecting, and he used to drive back from shul to shul in his Cadillac. Now, had people known that the guy was going and collecting gas money for his Cadillac, maybe they wouldn't have given so much. And it happens to be, it was Los Angeles, and it wasn't an up-to-date Cadillac, and he did some body work, so maybe, okay, not the worst thing to do, because, you know, you have to keep up with the Joneses. It was like a 10-year-old Cadillac. But, you know, that's something that people should want to know. So the standard that we're seeing here, brought by the Sefer Hasidim, is if the other side had known the information, they would have wanted to know information, they would have acted differently. Or they could have acted differently, they reasonably would have acted differently, then we have a disclosure requirement. Now, one important point on this, if the other side is making a mistake, an unreasonable mistake, an unreasonable assumption, do we have to correct them? And the Shulchan Aruch brings the following example. You go out to take your garbage out, and you're expecting guests. He doesn't say the garbage example, but this would be a parallel. You're going out to the street to get something from your car or something like that, and you're expecting guests, and so a guest comes to you and say, thank you so much for waiting for me in the street. That's so nice of you to be waiting outside. He's making an unreasonable assumption. I don't have to correct him. But there are times that we may have to correct people in their assumptions if they're making a reasonable assumption. Okay, that I just wanted to mention. Continuing, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Kaganoff, he's a Rav in the Vayakov. He has an article on the Shidduch context. It's called, May I Keep the Skeletons in the Closet? And he brings down two important principles, and he's talking about Shidduchim. We're going to use them for a workplace. And he says there are two categories that we do not have to disclose. Category number one is generally known information. If the information is generally known, I do not have to disclose it. And that could be generally known information about this individual or generally known information general about a certain fact. So I'll give you an example. If you're selling your house in Los Angeles and you have somebody coming from New York and they're not used to earthquakes, I do not have to disclose that my house is near a fault because it's in Los Angeles County. I don't have to disclose that because that's generally known information. Now, if I'm selling my house in Long Island and somebody from Los Angeles wants to buy it, the person in Long Island does not have to disclose that houses get flooded sometimes here, that there are tsunamis and whatever else that come and destroy the houses. I don't have to disclose that. That is commonly known information. So Rabbi Kaganoff says as follows, it is halachically deceitful for a seller to withhold important information that the buyer cannot find out on his own. However, if it's obvious things, stuff that he can easily find out, for example, he walks in and you see that there is water damage in the house. The paint is peeling, obviously. There are bubbles underneath that. I don't have to disclose that there was a leak or maybe a leak, because that should be obvious to someone. So a similar concept, says Rabbi Kaganoff, is true concerning shidduchim, dating. For example, if the scandalous activities of a family member are well known in one's hometown, one need not tell the other party, since this information could be discovered by asking around. the very interesting questions, how about if it's on the internet? Do I have to disclose it because something is on the internet? Or is that commonly known information? And does it depend if it's on the front page of, is it on the home page of Google? If somebody puts in the search George Smith and it comes up number one, but how about if it's only on the third page? Because people typically don't get to the third page. So that's an interesting question that we're not going to try to guess at. Yeah?
What happens if it's well known in their country but they move to another country?
So it would have to be disclosed. He says here that in their hometown, if it's known in their hometown, but it's somebody not in their hometown, then you may have a disclosure requirement.
I've heard before from rabbis that if there's something in your past, especially for well children, if that doesn't apply to them anymore, something that they did, they don't have to tell the shi'ur.
Ah, so it's next step then. Next step. That would be that would fall under generally known information. Meaning if there were stuff in the skeletons in the closet, it's generally known that things were done in the past, right? So that would be something that's generally known. You have a question if somebody was an FFB. And did some of those things, whatever it may be. Then they may have a real disclosure requirement, depending on the circumstances and who they're dating, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so category number one, known information, generally known information, doesn't have to be disclosed. Number two, very important, we distinguish between significant and insignificant information. Stuff that is considered significant, material, important, has to be disclosed. Stuff that is not significant, the small stuff. It's funny, my wife is now reading the book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. Anyone ever see that book? Don't Sweat, it was like a number one. What's the tagline right after Don't Sweat the Small Stuff?
It's all small stuff.
And it's all small stuff. That's not the halacha. And the halacha is it's not all small stuff. Some stuff is small stuff, some stuff is not small stuff. So the second category of information that need not be revealed includes factors that are insignificant to the buyer. One is not required to provide an in-depth list of every shortcoming the merchandise has. If anyone's ever looked at a prospectus, right, to buy into stock, who's looked at a prospectus before? What does it have in there? All the risk factors, right? Does it have one or two risk factors? Or?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Most are. If it's like a public in the SEC in the United States, at least, to avoid the public companies, they'll list everything. Everything on the sun has risks of investing in the company. Everything, because what if there's a lawsuit? Who's read an FDA label of aspirin? Anyone ever read that? No one ever reads that. What does it? Is it a short list or a long list?
Long list.
Tylenol. This will kill you. This will cause you heart attacks and severe this and severe that. It sounds like it's like a serious thing. They're disclosing everything material and immaterial, significant and not significant. That is not the case when we have what we're talking about. Shiduchim do not require revealing every possible medical or yichus issue. The Chafetz Chaim distinguishes between a medical issue one must reveal and a weakness which one need not reveal. So that's an important distinction between them. If it's something small that would not disturb the average person, we don't have to disclose it. I'll give you an example of this. When I was in camp, when I was younger, we all had 12 guys sleeping in a bunk together. There was one guy that when he would snore, everyone would wake up. It was like a 6.8 on the Richter scale. It was like an earthquake. That's a medical problem. I have a friend also that we were in camp together. And when he snores, I was over his family, went for one Shabbos once, and I was on the other side of their apartment, and his door was closed. And when he snores, it's like there's an army walking through. So that's a medical issue. That's a significant material issue that would have to be disclosed, as opposed to small snoring, stuff like that. That is not a big deal. Rabbi Kaganov says, my usual litmus test is if the issue is significant enough that one might want to hide it, it is usually something that one should tell. I don't know if I agree with that, because we want to hide everything, typically, right? We don't want to disclose a small snort of this or that. So I don't know if that's a great litmus test. But let me ask you a question based on this, and then we're going to have to get into part number two. Disclosing for shiduchim previous alcohol and drug abuse. Somebody who was an addict, but quote-unquote is no longer. So this question was posed to Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz, who's a big posek, not too far from where we are right now. I have a student that became frum 3 years ago. She is now shidduch dating Baruch Hashem. She was in her past a drug and alcoholic heavy abuse. She has been clean for 7 years. 7 years is a significant amount of time to be clean. Good work. How much, if at all, needs to be mentioned to prospective shiduchim? How much has to be told? If needs to be mentioned, when? From the start or later during dating? What do you guys think? Need to disclose or not need to disclose? Not to disclose. What was that?
Later in dating.
Later in dating. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Let's say if or not, and then we'll talk about timing. Yeah. Yes or no? Yeses, give me hands up. Noes, give me hands up. One person. Okay, so two people. I'm not counting. I'm counting hands, not people. Okay, so two hands went up. So most said yes, said no. And the timing then is up for question. So Rabbi Berkowitz, just in the interest of time, because we have to get onward, Rabbi Berkowitz answered as follows: definitely something that she has to tell. At the right time during dating, approximately after the third date, he says. Approximately after the third date. We'll have to see why the third date. Enough time to give her a fair chance to allow him to see who she is, but not long enough to be emotionally involved. So that's the guy. Is it the third date? Is it the second date? Is it the sixth date? If anyone wants more information on the website, Guard Your Eyes, Rabbi Abraham Twersky has an extensive article on this exact question. I'm not going to read it out loud because I know there are a lot of questions, but we have to get on it. If there are time, then we'll take it at the end. So there's a lot of questions on these issues, and if there are questions that are relevant, a question should be asked indeed. In another context, there was an article in the Los Angeles Times about the brother of a friend of mine who had cancer twice, acutely leukemia the second time. And we're not going to go through all the details, but at the end of the article, this is in the LA Times in 2008, the article says as follows: nor does he know how a woman he might love will react to his history. You have to disclose a serious, serious history of cancer. It's not an easy question, he says. This is quoting the brother of my friend. According to Orthodox tradition, you go out with someone to get married. I think I will talk about it after I know she is serious, when I know it's somebody I can trust and I would maybe want to spend my life with. After a few dates, maybe I would start talking. So maybe a few dates when it starts getting serious. Okay, so let me quickly recap. We're talking about the prohibition of Geneva Stas. When do I have an active duty to disclose? I don't like to call it defect because it's obviously not a defect. It's something very positive about us that we're Shomer Shabbos. But limitations that we have when it comes to the workplace, leaving early on a Friday, being out for 25 hours. I keep Shitas Rabbeinu Tam. I end Shabbos at the WAN, so it's 26, 29 hours. I'm really strict about it. I keep it into Sunday night, whatever it may be. So what do I have to disclose it? So indeed, we've said that something that's common knowledge doesn't have to be disclosed. Number two, insignificant information does not have to be disclosed. So how about when it comes to the workplace disclosing our frumkeit? So I sent this question around to a number of friends, co-workers, etc. I started giving a shiur. This is the question that I sent around, so you know what we're going to get into the responses in a little bit. I started giving a shiur on the issues involved with being frum in the workplace and was asked by a few of the attendees how much, if anything, should be disclosed at an interview before taking a job. In particular, by way of example, if the job is demanding hours-wise, should one be upfront about not being able to work on Shabbos and Yom Tov, about kashas, etc.? The question is, how much to disclose, if anything, and when? I would love your input. So first we're going to talk about if to disclose. This is the input that I got back from various people. If to disclose and what to disclose. Then we're going to talk about the timing, when to disclose, and we're going to talk about how to disclose. So when it comes to if and what, I got a response from someone named Joe Shanker, Chaim Shanker. He's the chairman of one of the largest law firms in the world. He was my first boss, in fact, and he has smicha, and he's really out there in the secular workplace. So he says as follows: like most things, it's a matter of common sense, but I think of three categories. Baruch Hashem, he did not bill me for this. Okay, so he says as follows: I think of three categories. First category has three subparts to it. Okay, so it goes like this. Category number one: a place which has frum people already working there, I don't see any reason you need to disclose anything. Why not? Because they are?
Common knowledge.
Common knowledge, they're making it work, right? They can work. It's not going to be a problem. They've got, I don't know, two, three. I don't know if one is enough. I don't know exactly. But people, it's common knowledge. They know about it. Exactly, it's common knowledge. They can make it work, not a problem. Number two, that's still category number one. Part two of this, he says, if you interviewed with your yarmulke, your kippah, then you don't need to disclose anything more. Why not?
It's also common knowledge.
Common knowledge. People see that lid on your head. They know what it represents. I have already disclosed who I am by wearing that yarmulke. I know the question. What if you're interviewing in Podunk, Iowa, and they don't know what that thing is on your head?
Right. I was just
and saying, they can't yeah. ask, because that would be a problem asking. So we'll get to it in part two.
Are these categories and or?
It's or. Either they have people and it's works, right? They have fruit from people there. Or, good question, or you're wearing your yarmulke, or even if you didn't wear a yarmulke, which you should be wearing a yarmulke, we've talked about, you have to wear a yarmulke. There are limited exceptions, which shouldn't be relevant. Your resume shouts, this guy is an observant Jew. He learned in Or Sameach. He learned in the Mir Yeshiva from this year to this year. That's your disclosure. You have disclosed that you were from. That is sufficient. So category number one is basically I have to have my disclosure, common knowledge. If they're making it work for other from people in the firm, I wore my yarmulke. The resume says I'm from. That's enough. Category number two, a place which might not be familiar with the concept, but is large enough to accommodate you. That is the legal standard. Anyone familiar in the U.S. with the legal standard? A company that you interview at has to make a reasonable accommodation, meaning they can't burden themselves too much, but they have to burden themselves a little to make your religious needs work for them. They have to reasonably accommodate you. So he says, if it is a place which might not be familiar with the concept, so you wore the yarmulke, but they don't know. This is a real non-Jewish place. They have no clue what it means. My resume said stuff on it. They have no clue what it means. They don't have Jewish people there. So I'm going in. It's in Arkansas or someplace like that. Then he says that, but it'll work for them. They can make it work. Then here he says, I think you mentioned after you get the offer. We're dabbling a little into when right now, the third question. So he says, I think you mentioned it, but a little bit later in the process. We'll get to that in a little bit. And level number three, a place where it cannot work. It's just not going to work. It's a small staff that works 7 days a week. It's to be the sole IT person making sure email works through the worldwide company. He says, don't bother interviewing. Don't bother interviewing. So we have three levels. Level number one, you've done your disclosure. You wore the yarmulke resume. Level number two is they're not familiar with what the yarmulke is. They don't know what your resume said. It was in Chinese for them, talking about yeshiva. Then you should disclose, but later on. And what we're talking about disclosing is the material things, primary Shabbos and Yantav. Other things are really, in my mind, not material. Unless that it's like a certain job that has you going out and wining and dining clients, and you got to tell them about kashrus limitations. For the most part, we're talking about Shabbos and Yantav and nothing else. That doesn't mean that there aren't situations that other things may be material, but the material things are Shabbos and Yantiv. Okay, so that was Joe Shanker's view, the three levels that's important to remember as to where, if to disclose Shabbos and Yantiv, what to disclose Shabbos and Yantiv, depending on which tier you fall in. One, tier one, I don't have to disclose. Tier two, I have to disclose. Tier three, don't bother interviewing if it's not going to work. I got a response from a friend I grew up with, Avi Steinloff. He's the CEO of Edmunds.com. You guys are familiar with the online pricing guide and car company. So he responded as follows. I'm usually a proponent of being upfront on issues like this so as not to create any ill will down the road, i.e. a feeling that information was deliberately withheld. Got to disclose for the relationship. In my experience, 9 times out of 10 times, if information is withheld that the interviewer would have wanted to know, sounds just like the Sefer HaSidim, right? When it comes to dating. If the other side had wanted to know this information and you didn't disclose the birth defect, you didn't disclose, he used the exact language there, that they would have wanted to know, then the work relationship tends to start off on the wrong foot. The requisite trust is lacking and it leads to separation. If you don't tell them and you show up to work and the first Friday is in December or we just changed the clocks and I got to leave and Shabbos starts at 4, and I have a 2-hour commute, I gotta leave at 2, they're gonna look at you saying, why didn't you tell us? That is not good. That also creates a chilul Hashem. So we need to disclose it properly. Get back to Rabbi Kaganoff. When to disclose in the shidduch context, timing-wise. We've said certain times we have to disclose. We've talked about what I have to disclose. For the most part, Shabbos and Yom Tov. So when do I disclose it? So Rabbi Kuykenoff says in the Shilich context, you do not tell the Shadchan. There's no reason to tell the Shadchan. Don't shoot yourself in the foot early. But you would tell the woman that you're dating when it starts getting serious. That's what he says. When it starts getting serious, we have a disclosure requirement. It shouldn't be too early. It should not be too late. There was a very unfortunate situation probably about 2-3 years ago that a boy was dating a girl. She was a recent Bala Tshuva. And he did not disclose to her soon enough that he was diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis. That's a fierce, very serious disease that there is not a cure for. 10, 20 years down the road, she would, and she was told this in the gravest of terms, too late, you will be his nurse, not his wife. That's frightening. He waited till the sixth date where they already were already talking about marriage. That doesn't mean that that has to be 3 days, 6 days. In that context, things went quick. He should have disclosed earlier. Sometimes 6 dates is the right, sometimes 8 days. It depends the situation, but for the two of them, when they were dating, it should have been earlier. His rabbi, his rav, gave him bad information, and it caused a real problem. Okay, so Rabbi Kaganoff is telling us when things start to get serious, but not too late. Now, in the work context, we may have a different take. This is one distinction between with shidduch context and the work context. The shidduch context, you're dealing with emotions. And you have to be very sensitive to that to disclose not too late when they've already emotionally committed. When it comes to the workplace, we can wait longer to disclose. So I got a response from Jeff Kupiecki. We grew up together. He went on to Columbia undergrad, Harvard MBA, worked at McKinsey and McKinsey Consulting, and then he ran a number of internet companies, and now he's lives in Ranana in Israel, so also running an internet company. He says as follows, my advice is not to bring up Kashrus or Shabbos during the interview. But once you have the job offer, it's recommended before accepting to explain constraints. Generally, people will tolerate any request if it's reasonable, consistent, and the person makes up for it in dedication elsewhere. What does that mean? He explains, I would not suggest someone asking for Jewish holidays off and then saying, I can't cover on Sunday or work late. That is not advisable. I got a response from Simon Wolf. Simon Wolf we were Dafyomi Chavrusas in Yeshiva, roommates in undergrad. And then he went on he got a degree in Wharton, and he managed a fund for Fidelity Investments, and then he went into venture capital. Now he's mostly learning in Eretz Yisrael, gives Daf Yomi Shir, learns most of his day, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he says that the timing is a critical thing, and it's subjective. It really depends on the situation. You don't want to wait too long, you don't want to wait to do it too soon, but certainly don't shoot yourself in the foot and tell him in the first resume, and then the first interview. So he says, once the interviewee has been selected as the potential candidate, you're the potential candidate, you're the front lead in the race, or they have reached a point in the negotiations where it is clear that they are the preferred candidate, or maybe even right before you sign. It really depends on the situation, the relationship that you've generated with the people, the questions they're asking, how many rounds are there, how tough is it to get a job. There are a lot of factors that go into deciding when to disclose. He says, then you should disclose. He brings three real reasons to build trust with the employer. That's number one. Number two, you have to test on your side and their side, is this a good fit for me? I'm going to tell them, you know, I have Shabbos limitation, then they're going to tell us, you know what, but we work all the time. That's something that you should want to know. Maybe this is not the best job for me. I'm not going to fit here. And he, number three, he says, Vasisa Yashar, it is the right thing to do to disclose. Our question is not, should you or not to disclose? If you're required to disclose, you disclose. Our question then is the timing of the disclosure. Now, where we've gone through, if to disclose, sometimes yes, sometimes no. We've talked about what to disclose, primary Shabbos and Yom Tov, when to disclose. It could be once you have the offer, when you're the lead candidate, don't do it too soon. But you have to use your seichel. They say that there are 5 parts of the Shulchan Aruch, not 4. And the 5th part is seichel. How do you say seichel in English? There's no word in English for seichel.
Use your common sense.
Thank you. Common sense. Use your common sense about when the right time is and how to disclose. This is very important. If you go in, and Jeff was mentioning something like this, if you go in and say, you know what, I have limitations, I can't work then, I can't work there. There's a chazal that says that the non-Jews say about the Jews, shihi pihi. They're always saying, Shabbos hayom, Pesach hayom. Right? Always up. And then the co-workers, and this is a real issue, co-workers start making funny comments, not so funny, funny comments like, oh, I wish I was observant also, right? That's not a good thing to hear comments like that, you know, because they want to take off time just like we have time off. So it goes like this. When you're asked, you know, when you're disclosing, you want to say it like this. I want to tell you, I'm a very committed employee, potential employee. I'd love to work here. But I want you to know I have certain limitations. I'm a Sabbath observer. I have to leave early Friday. I have to come in late. I can come back a Saturday night. I do want to tell you, I will make up for the time in spades that I take off. I am willing to come in early. I'm willing to come in Saturday night. I'm willing to come in Sunday. I will make it up on the non-Jewish holidays. I'm a team player. It's important to me that this not be viewed as my being a slacker. I want you to know that these times I have to take off, but it should not reflect that I'm not a team player and a hard worker. So that is how to pitch it. And if it's pitched like that, it will only be looked at in a positive way. Okay, I want to recap real quickly and then just tell two quick stories. When it comes to if to disclose, we've gone through the three back the brackets. If to disclose, like Chaim Shanker said.
Do you have another card for the video?
It just stopped?
Yeah,
okay. If to disclose, we would say you have to disclose under certain circumstances. Not if you're wearing the yarmulke, if I've disclosed on my resume, etc., then you don't have to disclose. But if it's a place that's not familiar with it, with the concept, then indeed I would have to disclose Shabbos and Yom Tov. So this is if and what. When it comes to when, we've said don't do it too soon. Wait till you have the offer, or when you are the lead candidate, that would be the proper time to disclose. Just two scenarios. My first cousin was interviewing. He was at a law firm for about 6 years, and he decided to go look for a job elsewhere. And he sends me the following email. I had a third interview yesterday, and it went well, and they want me to meet the CEO and president next week. Four rounds of interviews. That is painful. So he's gone through three. Next round, last one, CEO. But before scheduling that, I explained to them my Shabbos observance. I tell him, you know, we're almost there. He's the guy. Their initial response was a little unexpected and worrisome. The general counsel had never heard of it before. Said he will read up on it, but it shouldn't be, quote, a fatal flaw. That doesn't sound good. He will speak to HR, human resources, and get back to me on ways to address the impact. He was worried that the other team members would have to pitch hit for me. Obviously, to the extent it affects work performance, it is totally fair for them to investigate further. Then he says as follows, but it worried me that a company that has 4,500 employees in a metropolitan area with 275,000 Jews, Washington, D.C., that they have no clue as to what a Sabbath observance for an Orthodox Jew is. So he sent that to me at 9:56 a.m. in the morning, the same day. At 9:50 p.m., he sends me a much shorter email that says the GC, the general counsel, got back to me today. They're not willing to work with it, so the process is over. Whoa. So I don't know how he disclosed it. You don't say, I got to tell you, I have limitations. It's a positive. I take off certain time, but I'm so committed, I overcompensate for it. I have a student that once sent me this. He learned in the yeshiva here. He says, I went for many interviews. He was from South Africa originally, and then he was interviewing for a job in Australia. I went for many interviews with recruiters in different companies, and I wore my kippah to all the meetings. People even commented, oh, you're not hiding your Judaism, are you? Right? So he was wearing, it was very evident. He says, Shabbos and Chagim. I only mentioned these after the first interview came and I received positive feedback. I found that if the people like you and if you like you, then it doesn't make a difference. If they have the faith in you that you will complete the work, then the leaving early and taking days off doesn't come into play. What he did was he gave them all the dates of the Chagim up front so they would know exactly. They know when Shabbos falls out. It falls out almost every week. No, every week on Saturday, right? So Shabbos is easy. Chagim, he says, here's the list. Tu Bishvat, don't take off. You work on Tu Bishvat, that's not a day. We'll have a whole class on which days you can't work. So that is more typical in my experience. They'll work with it. They'll accept it. It wouldn't be a problem. Just make sure they like you first before you make the disclosure. I'll just take one question because we're out of time. Rachmi.
What was the answer to that question before? You said for Baltuva, it's general knowledge that they have skeletons.
It depends the situation. It depends how serious. So there is a lot that doesn't have to be disclosed in that context. If you think it's something unusual and super serious, we're not talking drug addictions. It's a different issue. Right, that has to be disclosed. But if something that's in the past, why are drug addictions a real issue? Because once an addict,
always an addict.
This is not something that is merely in the past. It would have to be disclosed. It can have an impact going forward. Okay, we're out of time. Guys, Rabbi Breitholtz will be in shortly, so please be ready in 2-3 minutes for when he comes in.
Yeah. Rabbi, you said